right. We're holding on Mem Dalet Omar Aleph, second line of the wide lines. Okay. The last thing we talked about yesterday is that they at one point during David's reign, they conquered the country of Amorim. They took a crown of Malcolm, which we said is the name of their national idol. They took the crown off it and it weighed a kicker, and they brought it to David, and he started using it as his crown. So the last thing we discussed was if it was an ornament of Avodah Zarah, how was David able to wear it as his crown afterwards? And the answer is Itai Hagiti came and was mevatel it. Itai Hagiti, the same guy from Plishtim, who previously years earlier had been mevatel some Avodah Zarahs that the Plishtim had left on the battlefield, now also he came and was mevatel this crown so that they could use it. So the question is, Mishkala Kikar Zahav, if this crown weighed a kicker is something like 150 pounds. So if it weighed that much, how could David wear a crown of that weight? It doesn't mean that he actually wore it. It means it was suitable to be put on David's head. In other words, because it was so well suitable in that it was so precious. In other words, and what they did, as the Gemara is going to say soon, actually, it's choshuv and it's roy for him. And as we're going to see in the Gemara soon, actually, it was a perfect fit for his head, and not only for his head, it was a perfect fit for anybody in the future who is the legitimate king from David. That only his head will fit.
Even if his head fits.
In other words, what they could But what they could do, in other words, is they could have people hold it up or whatever and then put it on his head to show that it fits. They could hold it sideways and he puts his head into it, whatever. The point is that according to this explanation, they used it for ceremonial times like that to show that he's a legitimate king, and Mustama they'd have people hold it or whatever. That's one answer. Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says there's a different answer. Evan She'eves Hayabah, there was a magnet. There was a magnet on it, which held it higher up. So Rashi seems to learn that the magnet was
worth the gold.
According to Rashi, the magnet would have been attached to the crown. According to Tosfos, what it is rather that there would have been a piece of magnetic metal of some kind, like iron or whatever, attached to the crown. There would have been a magnet up higher up on the ceiling or whatever. Therefore, it held up the crown in the air so that it would, when he's sitting on his throne, it would be suspended above his head, but not actually resting on it.
What happened to the cable break?
No, what cable? It was magnets, is the point.
Yeah, between the magnets and the crown.
So they get a headache, I guess. I don't know. Okay. Rabbi Lazar says a third answer. Evan Yakara Hotabah. It doesn't mean that it actually weighed a kicker. There was a precious stone in this crown, Sheshava Kikar Zahav, which was worth the equivalent of a kicker of gold. So Mishkala Kikar Zahav doesn't mean literally it weighed a kicker. It means it was shokel. It was equivalent to a kicker of gold.
150 pounds of gold?
It was a precious stone. It was so precious that it would have been the equivalent in value of 150 pounds of gold, yes.
How many ounces in a pound?
16 in a regular pound, 12 in a toy pound. I don't know, whatever. So now continuing talking about this crown, there's a pasuk in Tilim, pasuk in Kapitel Kofi Test that says, Zois Haisali, this was for me, because I kept your mitzvahs. So what's the Zois? My comma. What is David saying? Zois usually means something that you can actually point to. What is he pointing to say, this I had because I kept your mitzvahs? As a reward for this, that I kept your mitzvahs, David says, Zois Haisali La'edus. This, the crown, became an edus for me. Became a sign that I am deserving, that I'm worthy, that I'm a legitimate king. Now, how is that? My edus. How does that crown demonstrate that he's a legitimate king? He would put it on his head in the place where you would usually wear tefillin, and it would exactly fit his head. So Rashi learns what it is that Rashi over here and also in Sanhedrin learns that what it was is there was a metal bar. Yes, a gold bar or whatever, across the inside of the crown. Only if you had an indentation on your head in the exact spot where that was, would it fit you. Now you have, there's a part of your head where when in a baby it's soft, and then eventually there's a plate, so the skull plates fuse together and it hardens. That's where the top end of your tefillin goes. By David, apparently it still remained indented, and therefore when he put on this crown, it would exactly fit him with this bar, even with that bar being in the way, as opposed to anybody else who has a different shaped head, it wouldn't.
Shiloh, where they should be the king tonight.
The fact is, throughout his whole reign, you had people arguing that he doesn't deserve to be the king, that he illegally took it from Shaul, and he's a murderer, and he's a noyep, and he's a this, and a that, and another. So,
but the king was made by someone. Who was it made
by? He was anointed by Shaul, but still, okay, he was by Shmuel. I mean, he was anointed by Shaul. The crown was made by the Ammonim. We're saying it was made by the Ammonim. It wasn't original. But once it came, yeah, we said it was originally it was on the top of an idol, an Ammonim. We said, yeah. That's what we said, but yeah. But now it became the evidence that David is really legitimate king, that it fits only him and any of his descendants in the future who will need to show their legitimacy in this way. Marsha gives a different explanation also. The vote is, actually not Marsha, Tosfos gives a different explanation. The crown was exactly round. It was round like a circle. Your head is not round, exactly. Especially the spot where you put Trillin is not round, it's oval. But it fit him exactly.
His head was exactly round, apparently.
At that point, his head was exactly round, or maybe the crown adjusted itself miraculously to the shape of his head, whatever it is. So that was the demonstration. Okay. So the question is, what do you mean he's putting on the crown where he's supposed to be wearing Trillin? He has to wear Trillin. In those days, they were... Anuchi means to put on, like on the Trillin.
Okay.
He has to wear Trillin. Where is he going to wear them if he's wearing the crown? You can't wear it on the crown. There's room enough on the head to be able to put two Trillin over there. So therefore, most of the Rishonim understand it means one above the other. So you have one can go over here, and there's still room for another one up here, below the point where Mokam Shaltinik Rofis. So most of them understand it that way. A minority of Rishonim understand it next to each other. So therefore, what he could do is, most of the Mephoshim actually explain that he would have the crown further down, closer to over here, and then he wears Tefillin above it because it wouldn't be respectful to have the crown above the Tefillin. The David learns the other way around. So according to that, in other words, the vote would be, if this is the crown over here, he would wear his Tefillin over here, he'd wear the crown, so the bottom edge of it is above. No, so actually that's how the David learns it. So everybody else learns it. A crown is, remember, a crown doesn't have to be that it completely covers the head. It can be something that just goes around the head.
Right.
So the band of the crown, therefore, would go around the lower part of his hairline, right above his forehead. And above that, over here, there'd be room to put his film. Yeah.
Right.
So therefore, so they didn't contradict each other. Okay.
Speaking of... to wear two pairs of children.
So as a matter of fact, the Sardim, those
Sardim,
those Sardim will wear Rashi and Rebbe Nathan, follow that, and they put on both of them at the same time. We Ashkenazim, who don't hold of that, we put them on one after the other.
But there's no... Rebbe Nathan doesn't say that you cannot put them together with Rashi?
Everybody agrees. Our Gemara is saying that there's room to put two. How exactly do you understand that? Does it mean one above the other? Does it mean one next to the other? Rashi mentions over here that you have room enough for two sets of
one above the other, because you said chatzitza.
One above the other would mean, in other words, you can't have one and then you can't have another one on top of
it
like this. But you can have one here and one here.
That's not on top of the other. That's
one above the other, however you want to call it. Whatever. One higher up on the head than the other.
Right.
Yeah. So, later on in history, you have eventually, 100 odd years later, you have King Yoyash, who was crowned as king when he was 7 years old, after his grandmother Athaliah had wiped out most of Malchus Beis David. The Pasuk says, Vayitziu es ben HaMelech, they brought out the king's son, this Yoyash, who was almost 7 years old. Vayitnu olav es HaNezer ves HaEdus, they placed on him the Nezer and the Edus. She didn't know, right? He had been hidden in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or in the attic of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, whatever. He was a year old at the time,
why
6 years later. Because she wanted to be queen, whatever. Right. She was a descendant of Ahab. She was not exactly a nice person, but she figured the whole Malchus Beis David is falling apart anyway. Many of them had been assassinated and whatever by that point, so she figured she has her opportunity to make herself queen, whatever. For 6 years, she's ruling. Eventually, Yahyadah called the Kohen Gadol. And they put together a coup. We talk about the end of the story. The end of the story is the first few psukim of that Torah of Parshas Shkalim. A few psukim earlier is where the Pasuk is. He waited until Shabbos. He waited until one particular Shabbos. He made all the Kohanim stay there, both the ones who would have normally left because it was the end of their Mishmar that Shabbos and the ones who were coming in. And so he had extra manpower over there, and he gave them specific instructions how to carefully bring out Yoyash and crown him as king in front of everybody, and then make sure that everybody stays in their positions. And if Athaliah comes and take her out of this Mikdash and kill her, et cetera, he put all the plans together very carefully. Anyway. So the Pasuk says, she was killed in the end, yeah. Vayesiru ben HaMelech, the Pasuk says, they brought out the king's son, Yoyash, vayitnu olav es HaNezer ves HaEdus, and they placed upon him the Nezer and the Edus. So what is Nezer and what is Edus? Nezer zuklila, Nezer is a crown, that means this crown that we just described, the one that came originally from Ammon. Eidos. Why is it called Eidos? So the Gemara is understanding that Eidos is not a separate thing they placed on him. Rather, it's the crown itself is the Eidos. It could be. In other words, the Nezer, namely the Eidos. The Nezer, which constitutes the Eidos. So on the Pasuk Mephoshim give different other explanations. The Eidos can mean the Sefer Torah that a king is always supposed to carry with him, whatever. But the Gemara is darshining it over here. That the crown itself, Eidos, who the base of it, it's a testimony for base of it. It's called Roy Lamachos Haylamte. Anybody who's worthy to be the king, it'll fit him. Again, with the bar across it or the shape of it, according to Rashi versus Taisus. If he's not worthy, then it won't fit him. So therefore, when they put the crown on him and they saw that it exactly fit his head, then they knew that he's worthy of being the new king. Similarly, going back to David's time, the Pasuk says at the beginning of Malachim, Adonijah ben Haggis, who was at that point, he was the oldest surviving son of David. He was David's third or fourth son. So you had the oldest son Amnon, you had the whole story with him raping Tamar, and a couple of years later, Absalom assassinated him. Absalom rebelled against David, and he was killed. They were half-brothers, each one from a different mother. Then you had the third son, Kilov. We don't know much about him. Actually, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that he was a tzaddik drummer, that he's one of the people who only died to Etish al-Nachash, but we don't know about it. We don't know really anything about him and trying to be the king or not. The next one who was around was Adonijah, Misnase Lemer, who was raising himself up, Lemer, to say, Ani Emloch, I'm going to be the king. And he tried to put together a whole thing over there. And then in the end, David was informed about it by Bathsheba and Nosan Anavi, and he gave immediate instructions to crown Shlomo while he's still alive. Anyway. So what's this misnase lemer? Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, misnase lahom of Elohi Lamte. It means that Adonijahu was trying to raise himself up. He was trying to make the crown fit him, and it wouldn't fit. And in fact, Marashah says the word misnase implies that he was trying to squeeze his head into it that it should fit, but it wouldn't go, showing that he really wasn't the legitimate king after all. But he nevertheless tried to ignore that and still put together his supporters and become king. The Pasuk continues, speaking of Adonijahu, Vayasla Rechav Oparoshim, the Pasuk continues, he made for himself a
boat. Adonijahu.
Adonijah is two different forms of the same name, just like Yeshaya, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, yeah. Okay, so the Pasuk continues, Vayaslo Rechavu Faroshin, he made for himself a chariot and horsemen.
How old was he?
He doesn't say. He was one of David's older sons. Yeah, David had six sons before he became king in Yerushalayim, and then afterwards in Yerushalayim, he married more wives in Pelag Shem, up to the maximum number of 18, which is allowed to. Shlomo was one of those younger sons. Shlomo was 12 years old at the time. I guess it was much older. I don't know. He could have been 30, 40. I don't know. Anyway. So Vayasla Rechav Uparoshim, it says he made for himself a chariot and horsemen, Bachamishi Mishratum Uponav, and 50 men running in front of him. So the question is, Myra was cited. What was so special about these 50 people? Part of the question is, Rashi explains, the question is that it says, Vayasla, he made for himself, implying that there was something unusual about them, because otherwise it would say he appointed for himself, or he hired for himself, or whatever. Also, the question is, why is 50 so special? Absalom, when he went to start his rebellion, had 200. So what's so special about these 50? Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kulam the Tulei Tchol, all of these 50 men had their spleen removed, because the spleen, it's an internal organ, but it has a function, it disposes of used red blood cells, but it's not necessary for a person to live. In fact, in Halacha, if the Tchol is missing, an animal is still kosher. So they would give them, Rashi explains in Sanhedrin, they gave them some kind of chemicals and some kind of medicinal drink to drink that would dissolve the spleen. And that way they're lighter, that way they're not weighed down by it, and that way they can run faster. They also have the soles of their feet. Are you allowed to do it? I don't know. I mean, in this case, which for the covet of a king, maybe. I mean, he wasn't a king, but whatever. It's a question whether it's allowed or not, but this is what he did. I don't know about that necessarily. If there's a reason for it, then yes, the same way as you can.
How do we know?
I don't know. In this case, the reason would be to make them lighter, to make them run faster. You could argue maybe. I mean, we learned earlier in the Masechta about the whole question of hamstringing horses, where it's for the covet of a king. Maybe this would be allowed. I don't know. We're not talking about whether it's allowed or not. We're saying what he actually did. They all have the soles of their feet hollowed out. Like all the flesh was removed, so that way they can run on thorns. I'm sure it must have been very painful, but this way they could run on thorns and whatnot and not feel it.
I guess it was the nerves probably.
Yeah, probably very likely. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever it is, that's the point. That was the specialty of these 50 people. Look, we're not saying Adonijah was a nice guy, but that's what we're describing. The Pasuk wants to describe what he was doing in order to make himself honorable in the eyes of the people, and this is what he did. Mishnah says. Shaul Proclus and philosopher, such as Gamliel Ba'akoi, Proclus and philosopher, so Rashi says, was a min over Kechavim, meaning not just a run of the mill, not just a run of the mill over the Avodah Zarah, but an actual priest of Avodah Zarah. So he asked Rabbi Gamliel Ba'akko, he asked Rabbi Gamliel in the city of Akko, Shaya Ruchet from Mechot Shalakroviti. Rabbi Gamliel was bathing there in a bathhouse of Akko. This is the pastor, this is Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. Wait a minute, a different Rabbi Gamliel than who?
Not the one that we know.
No, this is the regular one. When we talk about Rabbi Gamliel, unspecified, it usually means Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. The one with the whole story of Tfilah Sabbath Rishurus and being deposed in favor of Elazar ben Azariah and so forth. Yeah, that one. So Rav Gamliel was in Akko. He was bathing in a bathhouse of Aphrodite. Aphrodite is the name of an idol. It represented Venus. So you had a chotzer over there where there was a statue of the idol. And then Aphrodite, I don't know if we mentioned previously, but okay, anyway. There was a statue of this deity. Inside the chotzer, there was a merchot, there was a bathhouse. So now Rav Gamliel is bathing in the bathhouse. So this Proclus spent philosopher asks him, Amalei, he says to him, because of the Terachem, lo yidbach v'yarchom omim nacherim, it says in your Torah that nothing of the banned substance of Avodah Zarah should be in your hands, mipnei ma'atha reich t'merchot shal Aphrodite, why are you bathing in a bathhouse of Aphrodite?
Very good question.
Amalei, the Rav Gamliel tells him, in the shivin b'merchot, you do not answer about words of Torah in the bathhouse, because people are undressed over there. How he's even allowed to say that, which is itself a halacha the Gemara is going to deal with, wait, when he went out, Amaloi, he says to this Proclus, number one, Anile Bossi Bigvula, I didn't come into its boundary. She, Bob Bigvuli, she came into my boundary. In other words, the bathhouse already existed before. And then afterwards, they put up this Aphrodite idol over there. So that doesn't mean that you don't have, it doesn't have the ability to be Gozol Sarabim. You have the public up until now was allowed to use this bathhouse. The fact that you have it now in the Choster is not enough to ask it. It's not enough to ask it. We'll see in the Gemara whether this answer and the other answers Rav Gamliel gave him were legitimate answers or not legitimate. We'll get to it. Wait.
Then you can say the same thing about the Beis HaMikdash. They put idols inside
and now the Beis HaMikdash is still the Beis HaMikdash. No, but there's also a difference. Mefarshim point out. That's why Rashi makes a point of saying that the idol was in the chaser. If the idol had been inside the building itself, that's different. Then you don't have that answer. But without the chaser, that's different. Okay. Then he continues. We don't say that a merchot is made as a beautification of Aphrodite. A bathhouse is not something by which you beautify an Avodah Zarah. Ella oimim nasa Aphrodite no la merchot. Just the opposite. They say the Aphrodite has been made as a noy, something beautiful for the merchot. So in other words, the Aphrodite is like a secondary thing for the merchot. The merchot is the main thing. Different Mephoshim talk about Rashi learns over here that this is a separate answer. You have number one, the Merchot was here first, and number two, even if the Aphrodite had come first, but the Merchot is not an adornment for the Aphrodite, but rather the other way around. Some Mephoshim learn that's all it's a continuation. It's all one long answer. What does it mean that it came into my pool? Because they put it up as a decoration to decorate the bathhouse with, rather than the other way around. If they put up the Aphrodite first, then you could argue that maybe the bathhouse was made in its honor. Then he continues. Hold on. We'll see in the Gemara. That's what the Gemara is for. Davar Acher, another explanation, continues Rav Gamliel. Im noisin v'chomamin habe, even if they gave you Proclus, if they gave you a huge amount of money, you wouldn't go in front of your idol, in front of your deity, naked and a balkeri, and urinate in front of it. Zoo, this particular one, I met it's standing there and above the sewer, above the urinal, and everybody's urinating in front of it. When the Pasuk says you're not allowed to have hana from Avodah Zarah, it says from their gods, implying only if they're treating it as a god is it osur. If they're not treating it as a god, then it's mutter. And in this case, they're obviously not treating it as a god. They're urinating and then going as a balkari and whatever in front of it. So therefore, yeah. So the first question the Gemara says is the hechi ovid hachi. How is Rav Gamliel able to answer him in the bathhouse itself to say the words ein meshivin b'merchot? That itself is a halacha, and you can't say halachas in the merchot. A mikveh may very well be the same as a merchot in that regard. The truth is, the distinction they make, the distinction that's made in halacha between a merchot and any other kind of thing, is a merchot, not only people are undressed, but also you also have hevel, you also have a lot of hot, a lot of hot and moist, stagnant, foul air or whatever. So maybe a mikveh might well be the same thing. I don't know. Anyway, you're allowed to think words of Torah, any kind of place, even a place where you're not allowed to speak words of Torah. For example, let's say you have mavoyas amatunafim, you have, for example, alleyways, side streets that are dirty, that have human waste in them or whatever. You're not allowed to speak words of Torah in such places, but you're allowed to think of it. Chutz mibeit hamechus or beit hakiseh, except for a bathhouse or a bathroom. So it's in a bathroom. That's the question. How is he in a bathhouse? How is he able to tell him the halacha that we're not allowed to answer, Torah in a bathhouse? And the chitame of the Lashon Chola. So you might say, okay, maybe he didn't tell it to him in Lashon Kodesh. He told him in another language. He told him in Greek or whatever. It doesn't work. Mundane things, like to talk about business or whatever, you're allowed to talk about it in the Merchot, even if you're talking in Lashon Kodesh. On the other hand, Dvarim Shokho...
People say you cannot do it today. You're not allowed to use. Well, that's what they claim.
I don't know what they claim.
But Hebrew is not allowed to be spoken because they're divrechayil.
That's not what we're saying. No. That's another matter. You're talking about. You have the whole discussion of when they started reviving modern Hebrew that you shouldn't necessarily be using it because you're using it for Dvarim Shokho. There's different levels of divrechayil. That Rambam, I think, that Rambam in Pirkei Avos when I talk about over there about the siyag l'chach mashtika or whichever lashon it is over there that Rambam describes over there. You have like six different kinds of speech. You have speech which is a mitzvah. You have speech which is obligatory. You have speech which is completely also like Lashon Hara. You have speech which is not necessary. Certain things you're right. You're not supposed to say Shalom, for example. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that Shalom is the name of Hashem. Okay.
But it says Divrei Chol.
No, Mutalaim in the Lashon Kodesh. You're allowed to say them in Lashon Kodesh. No, but it means except for certain things. You're not allowed to say Shalom. You're not allowed to say the name of Hashem. Okay.
But you can still say Alacha.
Okay, but again, the point is there's different kinds of Divrei Chol. When the Rebbe Rashab and the other G'dolei Yisrael of that period were against the whole thing of reviving Hebrew, they were talking about it's not just that it's going to be used. First of all, they talked about the people in those times were on a higher level than we are now. Not just because they were able to talk Divrei Chol and Lashon Kodesh doesn't mean that we're on that level. But second of all, it's not just that they're going to be using it for Divrei Chol. They're also going to be using it for things that are outright also Nivul Peh and Lashon Hara and whatever. As in fact, you know, you go any place in Israel nowadays, you can see they're using Hebrew for those kinds of things also. So yeah. Okay. Anyway, continues up by it. Dvarim shel kodesh also omen b'loshen chol. And on the other hand, things of kodesh, things of Torah, you're not even allowed to say them even in loshen chol, in a different language. So we're back to the question: how is Rambam Gamliel telling him the halacha that you're not allowed to say divrei Torah in a bathhouse? The answer is Tana. We learn in a braisa what it means is kshiyotza. When he went out, amala ein meshivin b'mechas. He told him you can't answer Torah in the bathhouse. In other words, at the moment, at the time when he asked him right there in the bathhouse, he didn't say anything. We just said nu or whatever. Later on, when he went outside, then he explained the reason why I couldn't answer you before is because ein meshivin b'mechas. So in our Mishnah over here, in the printed Mishnah over here, it says uch shiyotza, which that doesn't seem to fit so well with that. If you have it without the vav, there is a girsa without the vav. Then you can understand the kishayotza in the same way as in the Braise. It means when did he say in meshivin b'mechas? After he left, and then after that he continued saying ani leibasi, etc. The Ran explains also the vort is, the Gemara explains elsewhere, that there were three areas in a bathhouse in those days. You had an outer area where everybody's still dressed. You had an inner area where people are getting undressed. Some people are undressed, some are not. And you have the inner, and that's the middle area, and you have the inner area where the people actually bathe, where everybody is undressed. What the vort would be, according to that, that in the inner room, he didn't say anything. When he went out into the middle room, at that point, at least you're not allowed to completely talk Divrei Torah over there. But at least, for example, the Gemara tells us that if, let's say, you come into that place wearing tefillin, you don't have to take them off. So therefore, at that point, he's allowed to tell them Ein Meshivin B'Mechas. And then Uch Shiyotza. Then when they completely left and they're in the outer room or out back on the street, then he told them the full thing that it says in our Mishnah. Okay.
Is that the halacha?
That is the halacha. Yeah. So now we got to figure out, now we're going to ask the question that you were asking about, these answers that Rambam Gamliel gave this prophet, are they legitimate answers or not? Amar of Chama bar Yosef b'Rebi Amar of Oshia, Tshuva Gnuva Hashiva Rav Gamliel Loisehem, right? Rav Gamliel did not give a sincere answer to that Hegman, to that ruler. He gave him the Chov Akash, as he says, like he pushed him off of the straw. In other words, he gave him the not the real answer.
This Hegman was a guy, or he was just
a guy. Yeah, he was a guy. And as a matter of fact, Rashi says, Min Ovid Kuchavim, that he wasn't just any old run-of-the-mill guy. He was a min. He was a priest. He was really into his Avodah Zarah, etc. Yeah. So he's saying in the name of Rabbi Shia that Rav Gamliel answered a Tshuva Gnuva. However, Rav Chama Bar Yosef continues, V'ani Oimer Einu Gnuva. However, I myself, I disagree with Rabbi Shia. I say it's not a Tshuva Gnuva. I say that it was a real, legitimate, 100% valid answer. Tosfos gives a different explanation about Tshuva Gnuva because some of the answers that we're going to see over here are not just Dachov B'Kash, Adada, but some of the answers the Gemara is going to give over here to explain what Rav Gamliel is saying amount to saying that actually Rav Gamliel had a better reason than what he told this truckless. Why he's allowed so says the word Tshuva Gnuva therefore means alumo umuchusin ben, or something hidden, something and obscure. It's hard to understand why Rav Gamliel said what he said, or different other Rishonim talk about that Tshuva Gnuva might be an answer, an answer that we ourselves don't understand why he said it that way or whatever. Yeah. Anyway. So how is it? Well, how is Rav Oshia saying it's a Tshuva Gnuva, an insincere answer according to Rashi, or an obscure answer or whatever according to Tosfos? Dikamaloi, so number one, let's look at what Magnuvde. Dikamaloi, let's see. You have Rav Gamliel says to the Proclus, Zu emedes api abiv. He says that at the end of the mission, he says that this idol was standing over here by the sewer, by the urinals, v'cholad mashin b'fanei, and everybody's urinating in front of it. So you have to ask, how does that work? V'chi mashin b'fanei, am I happy? So what if the goyim are urinating in front of it? Rava says in a different context, Tosfos says we don't really know what context Rava said this in, but Rava said, prove it from Pa'ur. To the contrary, you see that people are constantly going and uncovering themselves and going to the bathroom in front of it, and then it's not bottle. So just because people are urinating in front of it, it doesn't make it bottle. That's Rav Oshia's argument. However, Rav Chama Bar Yosef continues, I disagree with that. I say it's not a Tshuva Gnuva. It's a real, legitimate answer, because the difference is, Du Avi Dasa B'Kach, Du Ein Avi Dasa B'Kach, because the difference is, Pa'ur is the normal way of doing it. No, because we see they were doing it all the time. And it's not the normal Avodah to do it for Aphrodite. The normal way of worshipping Aphrodite was not by standing there in front of it and urinating. Therefore, over here, if they're doing that on a constant basis, then Rav Gamliel is right. It shows they're not considering it a Geshkin. That's where the Mishnah said that. It's standing there by the end of the sewer. Everybody's urinating in front of it. So if it was something that where the normal way of worshipping it is like that, like Pa'ur, of course, that doesn't mean anything. But like this, where the normal way of worshipping Aphrodite is not by urinating in front of it, and everybody is doing, then he says, so Rav Chama Bar Yosef says it's not a Tshuva Gnuva, it's a legitimate answer. It's true. There is an explanation that's given in some sefer of Shabbos Tshuva, can't remember the name now. And that says, Rav Oshia still argued, nevertheless, though, still, you could argue, fine, maybe it's, so you could still argue, though, that maybe going to this bathhouse, maybe the bathhouse itself, is still considered a certain noy, it's still considered giving a certain benefit to the Avodah Zarah, even if, incidentally, everybody's going and urinating in front of it, and Rav Chama Bar Yosef is saying, and Rav Gamliel is saying in the Mishnah, nevertheless, not. We're not worried about that, because we do have the other points Rav Gamliel made in the Mishnah, why it's not a noy. And there's no reason to think that they consider it as an object of Avodah Zarah at all, the fact that they're treating it this way constantly. Therefore, there shouldn't be, the third Rav Chama Bar Yosef is arguing there shouldn't be a problem with it, but Rav Oshia still would have argued, nevertheless, maybe Rav Gamliel should have thought better of it.
On the basis of,
even if they're not treating it as a god, nevertheless, maybe you shouldn't be giving it Hana by going and then bathing in the bathhouse. Okay.
Strictly
Api Halacha, it was allowed, though. That's what we're saying. Well, so that's the thing. According to Rav Oshia, it wasn't necessarily. It was allowed. Obviously, Rav Gamliel was doing it. But the reason that he's, this particular reason that he's giving to this guy is not necessarily a valid reason why he did it. He would have made one of the other reasons. We would have to use one of the other reasons that Rav Gamliel said. Okay. Amar Abaye, Gnuvta Me'achor. Abaye says, I'll give you a different explanation why when Rav Oshia says that it was a Tshuva Gnuva, that it was an insincere answer or an obscure answer, I'll give you a different part of the answer that Rav Oshia may have held as not really a legitimate answer. Because Rav Gamliel was saying in the mission over there that the merchot came first, and then afterwards they added the Avodah Zarah, so that's not reason enough to answer it. You have to ask, and let's say it was the other way around. Let's say they had put the idol there first and then started building the bathhouse. Why would it be a problem? It's still allowed. We learn later on in the next text, Avodah Kechavim Sheyesh Lamerchot Agina, if an Avodah Zarah has near, next to its temple or whatever, has a bathhouse or a garden, Nen Mehen Shaloi B'Toiva, you're allowed to have Hanah from it without Toiva. I'll explain in a second what Toiva is. The Ein Nen and Mehen B'Toiva, but you're not allowed to have Hanah from it with Toiva. So now, obviously, Rav Gamliel is following the halacha, so therefore he's doing it without tova, whatever tova is. Rashi says that tova means shalo yachzik tova lekumrim, that you shouldn't be appreciative to the priests that they're making this bathhouse or this garden available for them to use. You shouldn't show them appreciation.
Thanks.
So you're right. So the fact that it's dedicated in honor of the Getchka, that doesn't mean anything. There's no such thing as hektish for Avodah Zarah. So therefore, as long as you're not thanking them for it, you're not
okay.
then it would be okay. A different explanation. One second. Tosfos gives a different explanation of Tova. Later on in the next parak, Rashi explains differently, and Rabbi Hanan explains over here that Tova means paying for it. If you pay for it, then you have a problem because then you're paying money towards Avodah Zarah. But if not, if you're using it for free, then there's no problem. Tosfos does say, by the way, if you're paying the people who themselves are over to Avodah Zarah, that's not a problem because then the money is not going directly to Avodah Zarah. So what's this? Well, because in other words, like this, so you have, okay, some of their money maybe is going to hit at certain times of the year or whatever, but if you have, like this, if it's priests of Avodah Zarah that are running the place and therefore all the money you give them automatically goes into the church's thing, that's one thing. But if you have, the person who runs the bathhouse is a person who sometimes goes and davens in this church or whatever, and then therefore, you know, but when you give him money, he's not necessarily using it for that. Then it's like we learned at the beginning of the Sefer, you're usually allowed to do business with the goyim.
What do you do when you want to buy a church?
It's a good question, what you do in order to make sure that the money is not going towards Avodah Zarah. I don't know how they do it.
What was the question?
How you go about buying a church nowadays, and you have, there's at least one Chabad house, but I know that used to be a church, so how do you do it without, I don't know, it's a good question. Anyway, the point is that, returning to us, Abaya is saying, so why is Rav Gamliel mentioning this distinction, whether the Avodah Zarah is there or not, was there first or not, it shouldn't matter. Either way, as long as he's using the bathhouse Shaloi B'Toiva, he's not thanking them for it, he's not paying them for it, then it shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Vani Oimer, any gnuva. However, then says Abaya, what did Rav Chama bar Yosef mean when he continued that I say it's not a true gnuva, that it's a real legitimate answer, because Shaloi b'Tovas Rav Gamliel to b'Tovas Acherim Dami, because for Rav Gamliel to use it without Tova is the equivalent of other people using it with Tova, because Rav Gamliel was important. So therefore, they have Hana, they have it good, the fact that he's having Hana from them. So if in fact the idol had come there first, then if the idol had come there, and I'm like this, also they could use it in their advertising, look, Rav Gamliel comes here, et cetera, they could induce other people to come there, they could even think that maybe the one day they'll induce Rav Gamliel himself to get involved with Aphrodite or whatever, so therefore, for them it would be a total. Yeah. So if the idol had been there first, then Rav Gamliel would be right, he wouldn't be allowed to use the bathhouse, only because the idol was not there first anyway, the bathhouse was there first, just because they put an idol up afterwards is not enough to have to it. And so therefore, Rav Gamliel's answer is a legitimate answer after all.
It is legitimate. Still, some people might say, you know what, who cares that it was there before?
People know. People will know whether it was there before or not. So therefore, it's not. Yeah. Apparently. Rav Shimi Bachia says, I'll give you a third answer, why Rav Oshia considered it to be a truva gnuva. What's wrong with Rav Gamliel's answers in the Mishnah? Gnuv samahacha. Dekamala, he says to him again, Zuhemedis alabib v'chol amashin v'chaneah. Going back to, we said that standing by the end of the urinal over there and everybody is urinating in front of it. V'chimashin v'chaneah mayhavi. So what if everybody is urinating in front of it? So before we were focusing on the fact that on the face of it, we see that it doesn't become bottle like a purr doesn't become bottle. Now we're going to focus on something else. Even when it comes to a regular Avodah Zarah, where that's not its normal method of worship. But nevertheless, we learn in the next parak, in the Mishnah, rock before now, if the guy spits in the face of the idol, hishtin before now, or urinates in front of it, or even on it, girra, or he drags it around, the zarach bar tatsoya, or he throws dung at it, Hadreza Einab Taylor. It's not bottle, because what it means is for the moment over there, he was angry at his getchka. He was angry because he had some kind of problem, whatever, and he gets angry and he abuses it, whatever. But afterwards, Baal Eretz Yavit says later on, he looks right back down at the earth and goes right back to worshiping the Avodah Zarah again. So therefore, it's not bottle. So what are you telling me, that because everybody's urinating in front of it, it's bottle, we see that doesn't work? However, then Rav Chama bar Yosef is continuing. I say it's not a Tshuva Gnuva. Why? Says Rav Shimi bar Chiya. Because Hasam Lefi Shaiter who wrote the Halah. Because there it just means as a momentary thing, he was angry at the Getchka. Vahadim of Fayetla. Later on, he'll make up with it. He'll honor it again.
He just told his screen back at him. So he's a nice guy.
Hacha over here called Shaita v'Shaita b'Zolzolakayim. Here it's constantly in this degradation. So therefore, there's no reason to think that they ever worship it as a Getchka. There's obviously just there as a decoration. Rabbi Ba'olama, here's a fourth way of explaining the Gnuvta, whether you think it was a tricky answer or an insubstantial answer or whether you think it was a legitimate answer. That Rabbi Gamliel says to him, people don't say that a bathhouse has been made as an ornament, as a decoration for Aphrodite, but rather people say the other way around. We made that an Aphrodite has been made as an ornament for the bathhouse. But the question is, again, this is one of those ones where Rav Gamliel could have had an even stronger argument than he mentioned in the Mishnah. What does it matter whether Rav Gamliel is telling this guy that it matters whether what's considered an ornament for what? No, not what comes first, but where it matters what's an ornament for what? And of a desire, a statue for the bathhouse or a bathhouse to honor the statue, and even if you made the bathhouse to honor the statue, my happy, what would be the difference? V'atanya, we learn in a b'risa, ha'oyma bayis zel avedis kechavim, if somebody verbally says, this house I'm dedicating to avedis zara, or kois zel avedis kechavim, or this cup I'm dedicating to avedis zara, on the side of it, the point is, loy amakum, what he said doesn't count for anything, it does not become osobana, chain hektish, laveris kechavim, exactly, there's no such thing as hektish when it comes to Avodah Zarah, only when it's actually used for worship does it become osir, so who cares, even if they said we're going to make the melchot a noy for Aphrodite.
How do we know that it's not?
We'll deal with it later on in the next paragraph. We'll deal with that concept. But yeah. So why is Rav Gamliel telling this guy that it matters whether people would if people were to say that we're going to make a bathhouse as an adornment as an honor for the Avodah Zarah, then it would become author according to this. Doesn't matter. But Rav Chama bar Yosef continues. I say it's not a Tshuva Gnuva because Nihid Itzuri Loi Mitzra. Granted, fine. In that case, it wouldn't become completely osur. No, Mia Ika. You still would have the issue that it is that bathing there would be considered an adornment. Would be considered you're doing something nice for the Avodah Zarah. So maybe it's not osur b'hanah, but it still wouldn't be the right thing to do. The fact that Rav Gamliel is actually bathing over there means, therefore, it had to be that his answer is really that he really had to use that answer. That if people were to think of as a merchat as a noi for Aphrodite, then it would be. It wouldn't be also the merchat wouldn't be also b'hanah, but it would be also to bathe there because then you would be giving benefit to the Avodah Zarah.
It couldn't be a noi because everybody was urinating.
That was a different answer. We're focusing on each answer separately. We're saying that each of these four Amoraim is explaining how there's some aspect of Rav Gamliel's answer that was a Tshuva Gnuva, that according to Rav Oshia was a Tshuva Gnuva, and according to Rav Chama bar Yosef is not a Tshuva Gnuva. So now we're focusing on one of his middle answer about that it matters which one is the noi for what, whether the idol was a noi for the bathhouse or the other way around. If the bathhouse is a noi, is an ornament for the Avodah Zarah, then yes, it wouldn't be enough to make it also about enough. It's not hektish, but nevertheless, it still would be wrong to do it because you'd be giving noi to the Avodah Zarah. However,
since the bathroom is not noi to the Avodah Zarah,
because that's what Rav Gamliel says. Practically speaking, you never hear people saying, you know, we're going to build this bathhouse that's going to be an ornament in honor of Aphrodite. No, they do the other way around. We have this nice bathhouse. Let's decorate it with a statue of Aphrodite to make the bathhouse look nice.
When you Shalobatova, what about the case of Shalotikonim? I'm giving them.
That's a free gift.
What's that in terms of don't give them, don't compliment them?
Oh, that's to compliment them, or that's like to say, Kamanoa, or with Kachovim there, or whatever, not to thank them for doing your favor.
No, but the fact that you're going there, you're giving them grace.
Well, that's why we said you're not allowed to have it happen for Torah, because then you're, then, yeah. Okay.
But no,
the Shalom B'Tovah, according to Rashi before, was again Shalom Yaksa Tovah L'Kovim, that he shouldn't be thanking them, he shouldn't be appreciative of them. Yeah.
And Tosfos said what?
Tosfos said Rashi himself brings later that it means that in the next paragraph it means to pay them or not to pay them. And Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of these different explanations. All right. Mishnah says, goyim who worship mountains or hills, so they worship the actual mountain or the hill itself.
So what's the conclusion of this?
The conclusion of this discussion is Rav Gamliel had his reasons for bathing in this bathhouse. He had the various reasons that he gives in the Mishnah.
Were they legitimate reasons?
Some of that, that's the thing. So we have Rav Oshia arguing that one or another of these reasons is not legitimate, is not the real reason. Some of them is just an excuse, or some of them is he could have even given a better reason. But in each one of them, Rav Chama Bar Yosef is answering, according to each of the four Amoraim, that it was a legitimate answer. Even according to Rav Oshia, we wouldn't say that all of his answers were illegitimate.
No.
Between one of them, there would have been one that makes
the least legitimate?
Wait, each one of them. What do you mean, which was the least legitimate? We have four different explanations in the Gemara over here of what he says. It's a Truva Gnuva that it's illegitimate, and the answer that it's legitimate, after all. So whichever one of them you take, the point is that he had two or three explanations for this guy, and between all of them, one of them worked out. And that's the bottom line halacha, is if you have something like that, you have a situation like that, you have a bathhouse with an idol over there, you're allowed to go and bathe there for the reasons that we're saying over here, because the bathhouse is not a noi for the Avodah Zarah, and because the Avodah Zarah wasn't there first, and because they were not treating it as an Avodah Zarah, that I'm not primarily... If you built, let's say, for example, if they built a nice building in honor of the Avodah Zarah or whatever, then maybe it would be also to go into that building, because that I'm primarily brings the last one, that if you don't treat it as a lekehem, they don't treat it as a god, because like this is standing over there and everybody's urinating, that's the most compelling one. Okay. Mishnah says, Hanochim ha'ogdim ha'saharim v'etagbois, goyim who worship mountains and hills, Kain mutarin, the mountain itself is mutar. So for example, Rashi says you would be allowed to take stones from the mountain or whatever, or you'd be allowed to plant on the mountain. Or masha alehen asurin. However, what's on the mountain is also. Now, what's on the mountain doesn't just mean statues. Obviously, they themselves are going to be also. What we mean is, even for example, let's say they were to plate the mountain with gold or with silver, then that gold or silver would become also. So even if they're not actually worshiping, even if they're not actually worshiping the gold or the silver itself, they're just using it to beautify this mountain which they're worshiping as an Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, they would be awesome. You would be allowed to go on the mountain. You'd be allowed to quarry stones from it. You'd be allowed to plant on it, etc.
In Rio, there's a big statue of Yoshka.
I know.
It's huge.
Right.
So the Alaha
that statue itself would be also Bana. The mountain. So the mountain might be maybe as long as the idol on it is on it, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to go up on it. We're gonna talk later on. We're gonna get in a couple of blocks to cases about a pedestal that has a statue on it at the time, it's a house that has Avodah Zarah in it at the time, but the mountain itself, in and of itself, is not also Bana. Tosfos gets into a very long discussion over here about there's two ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is the mountain itself is not really considered Avodah Zarah at all. If somebody worships it, nevertheless, they're chayav for doing Avodah Zarah. But other than that, we don't consider the mountain itself to be Avodah Zarah. And in fact, Rashi Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Chulin that draws a distinction between, let's say, if a person shechts, that we talked about the other day, if a person shechts an animal in honor of an idol, where it becomes also bana, there's a difference whether we shechts it, let's say, in honor of the mountain versus whether we shechts it in honor of the malach of the mountain, where the second one would be considered zivchei mesim, would be also bana, the first one not. So therefore, so one way of looking.
Some countries you have mountains that are worshipped and rivers that are worshipped.
Right. So the point is, according to one way of looking at it, is the mountain itself is not really considered Avodah Zarah. It is
even if it's worshipped.
So that's not only we're saying you're allowed to quarry stones from it and you're allowed to plant on it or whatever, but even other than that, we wouldn't consider that the mountain itself is considered. That it is considered Avodah Zarah for any purpose, however, except for the fact that if a person worships it, they're Chayav Mitzvah. The other way of looking at it is, Tosfos says, no, it is actually considered Avodah Zarah, and therefore, for example, you were to shecht an animal in honor of this mountain, it would actually be also Bana, not like the first way of saying it. And of course, if a person worships that mountain, it'd be Chayav Mitzvah. All it is just that the mountain. All it is you don't have to uproot the mountain itself. You can leave the mountain over there. You can leave the mountain over there. You don't have to when you're destroying Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. You don't have to go uproot these mountains.
Even if it's a
goy's
property.
What do you mean? Even if it's a goy's property.
It's a mountain, nobody's property. But let's say it's a goy's property.
Same thing. The fact that it's attached, the fact that it's number one attached to the ground, and the fact that number one, we're going to talk about in the Gemara the concept of there's no tfisas yedei adam in it. It wasn't made by human agency.
This is applied only to Eretz Yisrael?
No, everywhere. In Eretz Yisrael, you have a particular mitzvah to destroy Eretz Yisrael wherever you find it.
So what about rivers that are washed?
Same idea. We'll get to later on in the Gemara. That's the point, right? So therefore, but even according to the second way of looking at it, even according to Rabbeinu Tam's way of looking at it, you're not obligated if the goyim and Eretz Yisrael or anywhere in the world have been worshiping a particular mountain, you're not obligated to destroy that mountain. You're not allowed to do anything with it. But yeah. Okay, Shenema. As the pasuk says, "Lesachma ketef azahav aleim." As the pasuk says, do not desire the gold and silver that's on them. On them, meaning even if the object itself is not full fledged of a desire, for example, a mountain, but any gold or silver, you find that it is also. Rabbi Yosi Aglulu.
Natural veins of gold.
No. Obviously, right. Rabbi Yosi Aglulu. Rabbi Yosi Aglulu says, "Here's a pasuk that teaches us this concept." Now, Rabbi Yosi Aglulu, on the face of it, is just supporting what the Tanakhama says. We're going to see in the Gemara that he's actually arguing with the Tanakhama on a particular detail. So we'll get to that. But Rabbi Yosef says, the Pasuk says that you have to destroy Elikehem al Hahorim. You have to destroy their gods which are on the mountains, implying V'loi Hahorim Elikehem, implying the mountains themselves are not to be considered their gods, so therefore they're not also Bana. Similarly, Elikeim alakvois, but likevois Elikeim. The pasuk continues that they're gods which are on the hills, implying the hills themselves are not considered to be Avodah Zarah. So you have to ask then, continues Rabbi Yosi Aglulu, in that case, with name Ma'asherah Asura, then in that case, why is an Asherah tree also? An Asherah tree is also where and the pasuk clearly says that, because the whole pasuk goes like this. We have to look at Torah Ara Shalom on the side, big. Abed to Abdun is called Makomis Asher Abdu Shama Goyim. You have to completely destroy all the places where the Goyim worship. Asher Atam Yoshimosim, which you're going to dispossess them. You have to destroy all those places where they worship Esalakehem, their gods. Alahorim Aromim on the high mountains, Alak Boris and on the hills. Vesachas Kol Eitz Ranon and under every green leafy tree.
That means everything.
No, one second. Rabbi Yosef really is pointing out the fact that the pasuk has to specify Elikehem, Alahorim, the Alak Boris implies the Horim and the Boris themselves are not Elikehem. However, then we have to ask the question. In that case, by the same logic, the pasuk continues the sachat kol eitz ranon under any green tree. So you would understand from that lachorda that the green trees themselves are not of a desara. The problem is that the next pasuk continues that the asherahs you have to destroy. So what does that mean? Then is it that naturally occurring things have to be destroyed, like the trees, or not, like the mountains and the hills?
So maybe the Asherahs, yes, and the mountains.
But why should that? What's the distinction? He says, the reason is because an Asherah has human involvement. Somebody planted that tree.
If it was a natural tree.
If it was a natural tree, then it wouldn't. But if it was something planted by human agency, then, So Tosfos actually discusses on Amud Beis, so we'll see in the Gemara exactly what the machlokes of the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosi Aglulu is, but Tosfos points out on Amud Beis that, so Rashi wants to say over there that the difference would be between if you planted a seed and a tree grew from it, where the Tanakhama would hold it allowed and Rabbi Yosi Aglulu would hold it not. Versus if you planted a branch in the ground and eventually developed into a tree, then everybody would agree that it's mutter. That's also rather, because there's definitely tree that you don't have. A branch, because it grows into a tree. Because the seed doesn't exist anymore once the tree exists, whereas the original branch still exists. It became a bigger tree.
But those are the ingredients of the seed.
So then Tosfos argues with that. Tosfos says that, no, a seed, everybody would agree, is mutter, because there's nothing left of the seed. Yeah, obviously the DNA in the seed is in the plant, but it's not visible anymore. Whereas if you planted a branch, then that would be the machlokes.
Does it have to be visible in order to...
It has to be that you can tell that it can, yeah. Anyway, so he says, the reason why an Asherah is also is because there was human involvement over there, a human being planted it. Anytime when a human being was involved in planting it, then it's also, says Rabbi Yosi.
For
Avodah Zarah, yeah. We'll see that. Hold on. Rabbi Akiva says, I will explain it, I'll clarify it for you and discuss it in front of you. And this is actually the Lashon, Oven Lashon, the Lashon Havana. I'll make it understood. But Odun, and I'll discuss it before you. Now, usually that's the Lashon that a Talmud would use in front of his Rebbe. So Tosfos gets into the discussion over here. Is Rabbi Akiva a Talmud or Rabbi Yosi Aglulu? Is Rabbi Yosi Aglulu even older than Rabbi Akiva? So Tosfos discusses maybe not, but on the other hand, it could be that Rabbi Akiva is still speaking respectfully, even though even to a junior colleague, whatever. Anyway, You're asking the question, why is it that on the one hand, Horim, Horomim, and Gvois are not also, because we're Daushening Alekeim, Alahorim, Balay Horim, Alekeim, and on the other hand, you're having a problem, so why does it say Eitz Ra'anan, if a tree, in fact, has to be destroyed? The reason is like this. The Pasuk is not actually telling you what has to be destroyed and what doesn't have to be destroyed. The Pasuk is telling us, where are you going to find their Getchkins? Kol makam shata Moshe ha'gavaya, you should know. Moshe has given the Jewish people instruction. When you come into Eretz Yisrael, wherever you find a high mountain, the Givon Nisa'ar, or a high hill, the Eitz Ra'anan, or green tree, dash yesh sham avodas kechavim, be aware that there is avodah zarah over there, make sure you destroy it. So in other words, the Pasuk is giving us landmarks. Where are you going to find these the gods of the Goyim that you have to destroy? You're going to have to know to look on every high mountain and every high hill and every green tree. So when it comes to the mountains, fine. We don't have any other pasuk that says we have to destroy the mountains. Therefore, we can still stick with Rabbi Yosef Agrili's drasha elakeim alahorim v'layahorim elakeim. When it comes to the trees, since the pasuk next pasuk clearly tells us to destroy the trees, Vasharei and Gadeon, therefore we have to understand the mention of trees over here is just meant as one of the landmarks. Where are you going to find their getchkes? Under the green trees.
So could you say in a nutshell that Yosef Agrili is saying that on Karka there's no avodah zarah? Karka Olam means...
Not so much Karka Olam, but something where there's no tefisas yidei adam, something where there's no human involvement. That would be a mountain, a naturally growing tree, a stream, anything that's natural. Well, that's what we have to see what exactly he's arguing with the Tanakhama, because the Tanakhama just said, if they worship the mountains and the hills, and the mountains and the hills themselves are mutter. By the way, the Yerushalmi brings up an interesting point over here. If we're saying they worship Avodah Zarah on every mountain in Eretz Yisrael,
what are you going to do?
Never mind that. But the question is, how did they build the Beis Mikdash on Hara Maria?
What do you mean,
Avodah Zarah?
No,
they built the Beis Mikdash 500 years after they came into almost 500 years after they came into Eretz Yisrael. So what if there was Avodah Zarah there before that? So the Yerushalmi just said they did Apia Dibur. It was based on a Navi told David to build it over there, so therefore it was built over there. So what does it mean? Meforshim on the Navi. Otherwise, the Meforshim on the Yerushalmi talk about that when it says Apia Dibur means that Hashem informed the Navi this particular spot has never been used for Avodah Zarah. That's one explanation. Actually, there's an interesting explanation in that regard. We know that David bought the place from Adavna Hayavusi. Before that, it was his granary. So therefore, the point is, he was using it as his granary. Therefore, he didn't make it a place for Avodah Zarah, because he was busy using it for his threshing. Somebody says a vort on it. In fact, when we say in Heshinus, the second day Sukkot, we say in Heshinus the various names and titles of Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash, Evan Shesia, Beis Abchira, etc. So the third one we say is Gurdon Ornon, the threshing floor of Ornon. Is that a milah of the Beis Mikdash that it used to be used as Ornon's threshing floor? That's one answer. The fact that it was used as Ornon's threshing floor is what made it possible for it to be the Beis Mikdash, because it was never used for Avodah Zarah before that. That's one explanation. A different explanation also, as some of the Poroshim say, is because previously, much earlier, before the Yidden came into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem told Avraham to take Yitzchak and do the Akedah there on Hara Maria. At that point, that place became Avraham's property. From then on, and even if a goy worships Avodah Zarah on it, as we said before, ain't adam oisa dava shayna shalai. A person can't ask for something that doesn't belong to him. Therefore, that's it. Even if they put Avodah Zarah in there, it's not enough to make it also. As opposed to the other hills and mountains which they actually owned, and they would be able to pass hold like that by putting Avodah Zarah.
Yaakov also slept there.
Hara
Maria was the only mountain.
So that's what we're saying. It was the only mountain that was not used for Avodah Zarah, or even if they did use it for Avodah Zarah, it doesn't matter because it was owned at that point by Avraham and his descendants.
I didn't get it. What kind of king
is it? Well, he built him his Mizbeach over there for one thing, but also he built him his Mizbeach, or whatever it is. No, the point is also that once it was used for Avodah Hashem, once it was used for serving Hashem with the Akedah, then that came first. And it was now at that point that the Mikdash has been founded over here. It'll take 800 years. So it's not the vote necessarily that he owns it, but the vote is, at that point already, the beginning of the Beis Mikdash has been started. So therefore, afterwards, they use it for Avodah Zarah. It's not any different than, let's say, when the Greeks came in and brought Avodah Zarah later on into the Beis Mikdash. You take out the Avodah Zarah afterwards.
Well,
that was Avram did. Kumitalach la'aretz la'akol l'rasta. Yeah. But But that's how it's going.
You know what we said before? We said a Jew cannot be mevatel avodah zarah.
That's to be mevatel. That's what we're talking about here originally.
You have to be mevatel to build a bais hamikdash.
No, because if there's no avodah zarah there at the time, and we don't have to worry about avodah zarah that was there before, because already from the time of the Akedah, it was already designated for it, then we're fine. We will talk about, by the way, you mentioned a good point, though, if Avraham already acquired all of Eretz Yisrael, then how does anything in Eretz Yisrael become also as avodah zarah? We'll deal with that in the next peret, that there was a change.
Cool, yeah.
We'll deal with that in the next peret, that there was a change in that after the chet ha'egel.
Is it just Avram, or when a Yid is Koine a place?
No, but in this case, but it's not just the fact that he was Koine. Again, it's the fact that he began the process of building the Beis Mikdash there. Again, the same way as, for example, the same way as eventually after the Beis Mikdash was built, during the time of the first Beis Mikdash, had Menashe brought Avodah Zarah in there, and the time of the second Beis Mikdash, had either Yevonim brought Avodah Zarah in there.
Right.
That doesn't pass all the Beis Mikdash as a whole. You remove the Avodah Zarah, and it's Mutter. The same way over here. In fact, we're going to deal with later on in our parak. We're going to talk about the case. You have a house that was not built for Avodah Zarah. They brought an Avodah Zarah in. As long as it's in there, it's also. You take out the Avodah Zarah, and it's Mutter B'Hanah again. The same logic, in other words, once Avraham began the process of building the Beis Hamikdash by putting up the Mizbeach over there and almost bringing Yitzchak of the Korban on it, and then at that point, he calls it Hashem Yira, Hashem Yomar, Yom Bahar, Hashem Yira, that from now on, this is going to be the place. So therefore, at that point, it's as if the Beis Hamikdash is already there. Now, at that point, if the Goyim, from then on, in the next few hundred years, put Getchkas over there, doesn't matter. You take them out, and the place is Mutter, still to use.
But we were talking about harim that were used.
That's what we're saying. This is a har. This is a har amiria, yeah. So the har itself, later on, the Gemara is going to talk about that even a har is not also bahana because it was avodah zarah, because it was worshipped for avodah zarah, but you can't use it like gavoya. You can't use it for Hashem, but here this is an exception. Because again, even if they worshipped on it, it was not in a way that could make it awesome. All right, let's get back to the Gemara. Let's continue with the Gemara.
It has to be also according to science that all these mountains, everything shifted, things got destroyed and moved around.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, maybe, but that still doesn't mean that's fine. But that still wouldn't have happened. Within a few hundred years. That's over. Supposedly millions of years or whatever. But you do make a good point, which is actually that you have a different explanation about it. It's something along the lines of that I forget the details, but the Medrash I think that says that the place of the Akedah was not originally a mountain. Only when they came there for the Akedah did it become one. So therefore, beforehand, it wasn't a mountain, and therefore they weren't worshipping Avodah Zarah on it. And again, Abraham was the first one to do anything on it, so then, yeah. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosi Agluli, Haino Tanakama. Isn't Rabbi Yosi Agluli saying effectively the same thing as the Tanakama? Either one is saying that the mountains and the hills are mutter. Because on the face of it, Rabbi Yosi Agluli, Omer means that he's arguing. If it said Omer Rabbi Yosi Agluli, then it would mean that that he's adding a detail. He's adding the pasuk where the Tanakh Omer implies that he's arguing. So what's the argument? Omer Rami Bachama Omer Shlokish Tipui Har Kahar Ikebenaihu. The Nakamina between them is this plating. If they put gold and silver on the mountain, does that become also? Tanakama Sava Tipui Har Ene Kahar or Mitzar. The Tanakama will hold that the plating on the mountain is not like the mountain itself. So therefore, anything that's on them is also. Whereas Rabbi Yosi Agluli will hold that the plating is bottled to the mountain. If the mountain is not considered Avodah Zarah, then the plating is also not Avodah Zarah. The Leisachim Kesef Azav Aleihem, we'll be talking things that actually become also as Avodah Zarah that have gold and silver ornaments on them.
Either one capitals everything out and it can be used.
What?
Gold plating is coins to both of them.
No, so according to the Tanakhama, not. No. So 1 second. According to the Tanakhama, not. According to the Tanakhama, if Goyim worshipped this mountain and they plated it with gold, then the gold becomes also Bahana.
If you throw it out, then garbage throw away.
If a Goyim Mavakal, then he's Mavakal. That's fine. He can be Mavakal. But if a Yid gets a hold of it ahead of time, then he can't be Mavakal anymore, yeah.
I'm not about having enough in the gold, I'm thinking about throwing it off. Just throwing the garbage, you know, like knocking it off. I want to use the mountain as a...
Okay, so that he can use the mountain, but the gold itself remains also until the gold is mevatel again. Okay, Rav Shesha says that's not it. The kula amot tzipui har ene kahar. Both of them might hold that the plating of the mountain is not like the mountain, therefore it is also, and everybody would agree to that. But v'hocha be'ilam shenotel of a safe object can be forgiven. Machloikas over here will be a tree that you first planted it, not having in mind of a desara, and later on you started worshipping it as a desara. Namely, like this. The Tanakhama says that Horim and Bor is a mutter, implying anything where to begin with, when it was created, it wasn't for Avodah Zarah. So therefore, Tanakama Sava Ilan Shanotil was says Ovdin Motil. The Tanakama therefore will hold by the same logic. A tree was originally planted by a human being, but it wasn't for the purpose of Avodah Zarah. So it shouldn't be any different than a mountain that was originally created by Hashem, not for Avodah Zarah, and later on they started worshipping it. Therefore Mutter. That's the Tanakama. But Rabbi Yosi Aglili Stoffer, whereas Rabbi Yosi Aglili disagrees with the Tanakama on that and says, Ilan Shanotil was says Ovdin also. He says that no. Even a tree was first planted by a human being, not for Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, it is also because he mentions the point of Tfisas Yedei Adam. The Tanakama didn't say anything about Tfisas Yedei Adam. The Tanakama didn't say anything about human involvement. As far as the Tanakama was concerned, anything that originally existed that was not for the purpose of Avodah Zarah and is attached to the ground and is a natural thing or whatever is not also Bahanah. Whereas Rabbi Yisrael really says mountains and hills, I agree with you. But because there's no Tfisas Yedei Adam, there's no human involvement. But a tree, there was human involvement. It wasn't for Avodah Zarah. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter what?
Doesn't matter. It's still Aser. Once it starts getting worshipped, it still becomes Aser as an Asherah.
Right.
So again, here's where you have that Macholkas between Rashi and Tosfos that I was mentioning before about a seed versus a branch, where according to Rashi, Macholkas would be if you planted a seed and it grew into a tree.
Tosfos says it's Aser.
Where Rashi learns that would be the Macholkas, whereas if you planted a branch in the ground and eventually it develops into a tree, even the Chachamim would hold it Aser because the tree is just a larger version of that branch. And according to Tosfos, no. If you planted a seed, everybody would agree it's mutter. That's not considered Tfisas Yedei Adam because the tree that comes out of it is not noticeably connected in any way to that seed. If you planted a branch, that would be the machlokes. Okay. Mimai, and how do we know Rabbi Yosi really holds that? Midkotani Sefer, because the Mishnah continues. Mipnei Ma Asher Asur, because he says, why is it Asher Asur? Mipnei Sheyesh Bat Tfisas Yedei Adam, because it has human involvement. V'chol Sheyesh Bat Tfisas Yedei Adam Asur, and anything that has human involvement in Asur. So we have to ask, V'chol Sheyesh Bat Tfisas Adam Asur Yemai, what would Rabbi Yosi really be trying to add with those words? Lav Asur Yeilin Shenotel V'chol Avdei. He must be coming to add a case like this, where you first planted a tree, so there was human involvement,
right.
and then people started worshipping it as an Asherah, that it would be Asur.
Right,
but then, right. So therefore, so we see, says Rav Sheshes, that's the crux of the machlokes between them. And in that, by the way, the halacha would be like the Tanakhama. It usually is, of course, as like a chachamim against an individual Tana.
How do you find the tree by the seed or whatever the branch?
So again, what the halacha is as far as a branch versus a seed, that I'm about Rashi versus Tosfos, that I'm not sure about. I didn't look that up.
But if someone goes ahead, but the halacha is like a tree, a shade tree, you know there's different seeds for apples, there's a tree, there's a seed. So if someone goes ahead, they want to make dafka, they want to plant in a shade tree. But with the seed, I'm assuming that'd be awesome because you're doing this as an Asherah, you're using an Asherah seed to make an Asherah tree.
No, well, if the seed itself came from Asherah, came from something that was also Ba'anah, maybe, but if the seed itself was a neutral apple seed or whatever, and he planted it, even he had in mind for an Asherah, again, according to Tosfos, there certainly wouldn't be a problem with it. According to Rashi, the Tanakama also wouldn't have a problem with it. The Tanakama would only have a problem with it and make it also Ba'anah, only if he planted an actual branch.
What is an
Asherah? An Asherah is a tree that people worship.
Oh, it's not
a species. No, okay, so you're misunderstanding. It's not a species of tree. It means a tree that people worship. After Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Stover, Ilan Shenotel Vasef Avdei Aser. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda also agrees with this concept. Not just Rabbi Yosi Aglili of our Mishnah, but also Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda also says that if you planted a tree and then you later on started worshipping it as a Avodah Zarah, that it will be Aser. Like we said, Rabbi Yosi Aglili holds. And we know this, the Tanya, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Mitoich Shenema Elekehem Alaharim, given that the Pasuk says that you have to destroy their gods which are on the mountains, meaning we learn from that, V'loi Haharim Elekehem, we learn from that that the mountains themselves are not considered their gods, meaning you don't have to destroy them. Elekehem Alekvois, V'lekvois Elekehem, and it says their gods on the hills, implying the hills themselves are not their gods. So again, according to Rashi, they're completely mutter b'hanah, and according to Tosfos, all it means is you don't have to destroy them. But based on that,
no,
it's the same thing. Mutter b'hanah would mean you're allowed to take stones from them, you're allowed to plant there, whatever. According to Tosfos, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to do that, at least not as long as they're worshipped, but you don't have to completely destroy them. Shemeani, so Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says, based on that, then you could understand from that, Tachas Kol Eitz Ra'anan, by the same logic, if you're saying that you're saying under any green tree, would you say by the same logic only under the green trees are where you'll find their getchkes, but the green tree itself is not also. even if it's an Asherah, even if the tree itself is worshipped. No, Tamil Blame of Asherahem Tisrukun Ba'esh. The next passage continues, they're Asherahs, you have to burn with fire.
Implying
that you have to burn them. So that's it. Elatachas kolayt ranan lomali. So says Rabbi Yosef Behuda. Why then does the pasuk mention under every green tree? The answer is Ahu l'chad Rabbi Akiva who does that. That comes specifically to teach us what Rabbi Akiva taught us in the pasuk, that the pasuk wants to give us landmarks. The Amr of Akiva, as we said in our Mishnah, I'll help you explain it, I'll clarify it, I'll discuss it in front of you. Wherever in Eretz Yisrael you're going to find a high mountain or a lofty hill or a green tree, be aware that there is Avodah Zarah over there. But the pasuk is not telling us anything one way or the other about the trees themselves being mutter. The trees themselves, if they're worshipped, even if they were not planted to begin with for worship, are in fact usher. So we see that Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda holds the same as Rabbi Yosef really in our Mishnah.
So that's the difference.
They say that if you planted the tree l'chatchila for Avodah Zarah, there's no question it's usher. But even if you, even the Chachamim would agree with that, but even if you planted it not for Avodah Zarah, but afterwards you start worshipping it, Rabbi Yosef Agrubi and Rabbi Yosef Behoda are going to say there is Tfisat Yidei Adam, there is human involvement over here in the creation
regardless
of the thing,
when that
regardless
was.
When that was, before or after it became Avodah Zarah. As opposed, right. And therefore it'll be also Banah, yeah. So the question is, according to the Rabbanon, who don't hold of this concept, they say that if a tree was not planted to begin with for Avodah Zarah, then it's not Altabana. So what are they doing with the words in the pasuk, Vashereim Tisrufun Ba'esh? What are they doing with the pasuk that says that you have to burn the Vashereth in fire? And obviously it doesn't mean the case where they were planted for Avodah Zarah, because there's no Chiddush in that. So therefore, so according to them, what is
any
it?
Any tree that's been
planted. Yeah. The answer is, yes, they would say that's exactly what it means. It means a tree that was specifically to begin with planted for Avodah Zarah. So that kind you have to destroy.
How do they know that?
Because they're saying, we don't care about the Tfisat Yidei Adam. We care about whether it's something that existed independently of being Avodah Zarah. So if it's something movable, then obviously there's no question. It's also by law.
Asherehem means the one.
No. Asherehem just means they're the Asherehs that they worship. But they're going to understand it to mean, given that they don't hold of this concept of Rabbi Yosi Agrilis and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Hodas and Rabbi Akivas about that Eitz Ranon is coming to give us landmarks or whatever, they understand it to mean the same way as the mountains are not also as Avodah Zarah, because Elakeim Alahorim Vilei Ahorim Elakeim, by the same logic, Mesachat Kol Eitz Ranon Vilei Eitz Ranon Elakeim, the Eitz Ranon is not, because does not
green
become also, the green tree does not become also as their gods, the Chachamim take that the way it is. So therefore, according to them, a green tree is not, a growing tree is not necessarily also Ba'na, even if it was worshipped. No more so than a mountain or a hill becomes altar once it was worshipped. So they would understand Vashereim Tisrufun Ba'esh means if it was Mahatchila planted for Avodah Zarah, then it becomes altar. They're making that
difference.
It's a difference because according to them, no, for character, according to Rabbi Yosi B'Yehuda and according to Rabbi Yosi Agrili, I'm saying, according to Rabbi Yosi Agrili and his group over there, Faket, according to them, we have to understand why are we distinguishing between Har and Giva and Eitz. We were saying Har and Giva means they're not Osir, and Eitz is Osir. According to the Chachamim, being more consistent, all three of them, Har, Giva, and Eitz, themselves are not Osir as Avodah Zarah. They're only under them or on them you'll find Avodah Zarah. So the Chachamim are the ones being more consistent. So they're going to say, therefore, of necessity, the kind of Asherah you have to destroy has to be the kind that was planted to begin with for that. But if it was planted to begin with for neutral purposes, then according to them, it's no different than a mountain or a hill that was originally created for neutral purposes and then people started worshiping.
No instrument, not Tfisas Yad.
It doesn't matter Tfisas Yad. It matters what it was created
purpose.
For. Right.
What is
an Asherah is specifically, it's worshipped as a god or as a representation of a god or whatever.
Any kind of tree.
Achav made them. Yeah, many places in Tanakh it talks about them. Yeah, they used to have it as a combination. It was a very common kind of thing that a Baal and Asherah together, where Baal represented the Zohar and Asherah represented the Nekeva. Yeah, it was a very common. It was a very common type combination they had. Yeah. All right. So
you're saying
the Chachamim of necessity in that sense. Yeah. Because that they're understanding Har and Giva and Elon and Ace, rather, as all being the same kind of thing. Only the object itself that's growing from the ground is not Osir, only yeah. Okay, so but they would agree if it was planted to begin with for that purpose, then yeah, it's Osir. So the question is, doesn't Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda also need the pasuk to be teaching us that concept also? Let's say they planted it for worship and they never actually worshipped it. How would you know that it's also Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda needs that also? No. The answer is Hachinami. You're right. He does need it for that purpose also. So where did he learn the concept that if he planted the tree and only later started worshipping it, right, and then you started worshipping it, how did he know that it's also? He learns like this. When the pasuk says you have to destroy the asherus, the expression is that there's different places in the Torah. Okay, so there's different places in the Torah where it describes what you have to do with asherus. The pasuk that we were talking about until now in Parshas A says that you have to destroy, that you have to burn them. You have a different pasuk earlier and at the end of Parshas Vayikra that says asherehem tegadeu. You have to cut down their asherus. So what kind of tree would you have where you chop off, where you chop it down, and part of it that you chop down becomes osur, and the rest of it remains mutter? Have it omer, ilan shenotzer, let's say object. Obviously, it must be a tree where originally you planted it for neutral purposes. Later on, a person started worshipping it. So then what happens is, in other words, what do you have to be to get down? So you had a person planted the tree, it started growing. 5 years later, they decided to start worshipping it as an Asherah. At that point, after that, it starts producing new branches and leaves and whatnot. When you are coming to destroy that as Avodah Zarah, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is arguing what you need to do is then you need to chop off the parts that started growing after it was made an Avodah Zarah, after it started being worshipped. That's Tegadeon. The rest of it, the trunk that started growing before that, you're allowed to keep. That's Mutar B'Hanah. Since we have one pasuk that says you have to burn them and another pasuk that says Tegadeon, it must be talking about two different kinds of Asherahs. So we see, therefore, that even the kind that was planted originally and afterwards started being worshipped is also Osabana. The difference is that the difference is what becomes Osabana, the part that started growing after it started being worshipped.
In order for us to understand, that's why the Torah
says in two, Tristifun in one, Tegadeon in the other, right? That's what the other is saying, yeah.
Means
that you should burn it. That the whole thing is completely Osabana, yeah. Tristifun
was from the beginning.
Is where it was planted from the beginning, so the whole thing is also nothing to
Tegadeon.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have to really know exactly what point, how many years, how old it is to know which part.
Okay, so practically speaking, you come into Eretz Yisrael, you're not always going to know, but at least like this, if at some point you see that a goy starts worshipping a certain tree as an asherah where he didn't before, then you'll have to take a picture of it at the time to know what it looks like then, and then afterwards you'll know what
grew out. The pieces of that second case, you don't have to burn them.
What do you mean the pieces of the second
what
case?
What you cut from the...
No, they're the parts that you cut off, they were worshipped, they have to burn them, you have to destroy them, however we talked about before, grind them up, burn them, whatever, yeah,
The rest you can use.
Okay, so the question is, what are you telling me that you're learning from this pasuk Ashereyem Tegadeon? The Brice that we quoted before says that we're learning from the words Ashereyem Tisrifun Ba'esh. So what are you bringing in, another pasuk? The answer is evil loy nemar karma. Right, but what the Braisa means to say, if it hadn't said, then this is how we would understand it. Evil loy nemar tisrifun ba'esh, if it hadn't said, if we didn't have a different pasuk that said, one second, if you didn't have a different pasuk that says that you have to burn an asherah in fire, how you see omer, then you would understand asherah em tegadeyun means only be'ilun shenotem es chilo lakach. Even where it was planted to begin with, for avodah zarah, you don't have to cut down the whole thing, you don't have to destroy the whole thing, you just have to cut it down, whatever's left of it afterwards in the ground is mutabana. It didn't, but if we didn't have the pasuk Ashereyem Tisrifun, you would understand it that way. Now that you have another pasuk that says that the Asherah, anything that's worshipped, has to be burnt in fire, and then we have extra now the pasuk that you should chop them down, and we can understand that. That's talking about a case where it was planted neutrally, and then afterwards worshipped. So Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would say that, and Rabbi Yosef Lili would say that that's the distinction that the pasuk is making. If it was originally planted for Avodah Zarah, you have to destroy the whole thing. If it was planted and later on started being worshipped, you only have to destroy the parts that started growing after that.
Although, somehow after it was planted, it became worshipped. The whole tree was worshipped.
That's fine.
Why do you destroy just part of the tree?
Same logic as a mountain. They're worshipping the entire mountain, but we're saying the entire mountain's not.
It doesn't matter, the same thing as a mountain. You cannot destroy a mountain.
Of course you could. You could level a mountain.
but even in those days,
you get enough people with it. It depends on the size of the mountain. If you're talking Mount Everest, you're right. If you're talking one of these couple hundred... It could be done in principle. But besides, we're talking about whether it's off the bottom or not. Anyway.
In fact, the whole tree was worshipped afterwards.
That's fine.
But you destroy just part of it.
That's fine, because again, the same way as the whole mountain is worshipped, but you only have to you don't have to destroy any part of it. The same way, the tree, you have to destroy the parts that grew after it was made of a desert, but not the parts before that. Okay. Now, again, Abbanon and Rambam disagree with that whole concept. That Abbanon say anything growing from the ground, anything attached to the ground, can't become also. So the question is, Abbanon hai v'ashadeim tegadeon mai abdilei, what do they do with the v'ashadeim tegadeon? Ashadeim, tisrefor, and fine, we can understand. It's talking about when it was planted to begin with, for avodah zarah. Why are they? What case do they have where you only have to chop it down, and the rest of it that's still attached to the ground, the trunk is still, the stump is still mutabanah, what would be that case? The answer is Lachid Rabbi Shur ben Levi. They use it for what Rabbi Shur ben Levi teaches us. So Amar Rabbi Shur ben Levi, you have an order in which you have to do things. Didui avodas chachavim kodmin kibush Eretz Yisrael. Chopping down the avodah zarah has to be done before conquering Eretz Yisrael. As soon as you come into Eretz Yisrael, chop down the asherah tree. But then kibush Eretz Yisrael kodmin via avodas chachavim. But then getting rid of them completely, that leaves for after Eretz Yisrael was conquered. It's important to prevent people from worshiping these things. Therefore, start by chopping them down. That'll make it that people aren't going to be worshiping them anymore. Then you work on conquering Eretz Yisrael and settling the Jewish people in it. Then you go back and destroy the remnants of avodah zarah that are left, like the stumps of these trees.
They were
previously chopped down.
Yeah. First you chop them down, then you conquer, and then you
conquer. And then you finish the job, right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. How do we see this? The Torah is giving us instruction. Certain mitzvahs, the Torah gives us are for only a temporary period. The mitzvah that you're not allowed to leave over from the mon every day is a one-time thing, only 40 years in the midrash. It has applications, and we learn from it things for the future. So here we learn about the order and about the order in which we have to take things.
So does that mean the same thing will happen when Mashiach comes?
I don't know. Could be. It doesn't necessarily have to be. It could be something. It could be like the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, these prophet halachas b'lo shtisi klal. You could have these impossible cases in halacha that never happen and never will happen. But we learn things in avodah from them. We learn things in how to serve Hashem from them. Maybe over here you could learn it as far as getting rid of bad midas. I don't know. First you have to chop it down, stop doing it. Then you work on the conquest, and later on you can worry about uprooting. Maybe.
Very good.
Yeah. The Tanya of Yosef, as in fact, Rabbi Yosef taught a Braisa, when the Pasuk says "Vinitastimus mizachaisam," the Pasuk says you should tear apart their altars and take apart the stones. Again, implying Vahanach, implying and then leave them there, because it doesn't say burn the stones, just to take them apart and then leave a pile of stones there. Vishibarkemus matzevaisam, break their matzevas, their single stone pillars, and again implying Vahanach, and then leave them, because it doesn't say to burn the pieces. Or grind them up or whatever. So the question is, what do you mean leave them there forever? The fact is you have to burn them. So you've taken apart a mizbeach or a maseva, you have to burn or otherwise destroy the pieces. What do you mean just take them apart and leave them? It means first chase the goyim out of Eretz Yisrael, then go back and burn these, and then burn that's what we just said. This that we just said. Rabbi Shrub and Levi says, Rabbi Yosef taught a braisa that says the same thing in different words. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is svarim and all. Fine. Where's Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda to learn that concept from? He says, yes, because the Pasuk says, in Parshas Re'eh over there, in the Pasuk that we were quoting before, it starts by saying, Abed to Abdun, destroy, you should destroy. Therefore, meaning, in other words, you have to do it again. Abed, Vachach to Abdun. First do an initial destruction, and later on do a complete destruction. It could be, but what's the Darshan from it, then we do that. Hey, but Abbanon, what are the Abbanon answer to that? They say, They say, yes, but we learn a different concept from that passage. We learn that when you're destroying avodah zarah, you have to completely uproot it. In other words, for example, a tree. It's not just enough to chop down the tree. You actually have to go and dig the roots out of the ground. And the same thing, any other avodah zarah, you have to completely find all the little bits and pieces of it or whatever and get rid of it.
That's a big job.
Yeah, okay. Fine. Where's Rabbi Yosef Behod learning that concept from? If he's using the word abed to avdom to teach us that there's a two-stage process in destroying them. The answer is not gelei. He says, yes, but you can learn that from the pasuk continues that you should destroy their name from that place, implying anything that could be called by their name, any root or whatever. Yeah. V'rabbanon, what are the rabbanon answer to that? We're going back and forth over here. So the rabbanon answer, ahu lachanis l'shem. Yes, but that word, ibad kemes shumam, teaches us a different din. That not only do you have to destroy the avodah zarah, you also have to call it by a derogatory name. Call the place by a derogatory name from then on. The Tanya, as we learn in a Brisa, Rabbi Yezer, where do we know that when you're uprooting Avodah Zarah, you have to destroy even the root? Therefore, the Pasuk says, you should destroy their name, which is like what Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hoja is saying, that you learn that from Yibad Temes Shemam. Amalei Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Yezer, "V'alei kanema abed to abdon." But you already have the pasuk abed to abdon, which, as we just said before, the chachamim, we're learning that Rabbi Yezer, Rabbi Yehuda learned from that you have the double, the two stages in destroying it and
chopping off and later on
destroying completely, right? And the Rabbanon learned from that shesara chashara shachareha. Im kain v'atam alayim v'ibatim eshrom en amakamahu. What does it mean? Destroy their name from this place. It means lachanis l'shem. Means you have to nickname it by, you have to give it a nickname. So it continues, Rabbi Akiva, yachol l'shvach. You would think you can give it a positive name. And the Gemara interjects in the Braisa, but one second, l'shvach, what do you mean? Right. Of course you can't give it a positive name. Ella, no. What the Braisa means, what Rabbi Akiva means, yachol loy l'shvach v'loy l'gnai. Maybe you could give it a neutral name. Yeah. Not for praise. Not for. Yeah. No, therefore, different positives, shaket, shakten, v'sayv, sabben, v'cheirem hu, you should consider it completely disgusting and completely abhorrent because it is cheirem, meaning that it has to be a derogatory name. Okay, so what is an example of that? Hoyu koronos a beis galia. Suppose, for example, that up until now, the goyim called this place beis galia, which Rashi says is a loshen meaning it's a high place. Galia meaning high up, loshen goyva, gully. Koronos a base carrier. Instead, you should call it base carrier, which means a low down place, the dugout place. Similarly, Ein Kol, if until now the Goyim called the place Ein Kol, the eye of everyone, like everyone's eyes are looking towards it, instead call it Ein Kol, the eye of the thorn, as a derogatory thing. Some Rishonim have a girsa over here. I think it's also brought in Ein Yaakov. That another example of it is that if they called the place Pnei Moilach, the face of Moilach, instead call it Pnei Kela, the face of the dog. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. That's what it means when it says Abid. When it says V'ibatem es Shmam, not like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says that that's where we learn that you uproot the roots. No, that's where you learn that you call it by derogatory name. So even if they use, first of all, the Knanim, for example, spoke a language very closely related to Hebrew. But okay, so if they call it that in English, they use a correspondence. They did. They spoke a language very, very, very close.
Not Aramaic.
No, well, it had Aramaic elements in it, probably in the style of it. Hebrew and Aramaic are closely related languages anyway. But yeah, the people of Knanim, spoke a very Hebrew-like language.
How do we know that?
We know that from archaeology, first of all, but perhaps we also know it from various sources in Torah. There's actually a place, there's actually a pasuk in Yeshaya that's called Hebrew, Loshen Knan. That is called Loshen Eretz Knan. Shaf Eretz Knan, whatever, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go a few lines further and then we'll move. Tani Tana Kameh Rav Sheshes. The Tana taught the following braisa in front of Rav Sheshes. Ha'akum o'ogdim et ha'horim et ha'gvoris hein mutorin v'ovdein v'sayit. If goyim worship mountains or hills, so as we said in the Mishnah, they're mutter ba'anar, or at least mutter in the sense that you don't have to destroy them, but v'ovdein v'sayit, but people who worship them are going to be chayiv misa by the sword, like any case where goy is over on any of their shev mitzvahs menayach, because for that purpose it's for sure considered avodah zarah. That's a zroyim, that's a yirokas. On the other hand, if goyim are worshipping planted seeds or planted grains or vegetables, hey nasurin v'evdein v'sayif. Not only the people are chayiv misa, but also the grain or the vegetables themselves becomes awesome. Amalei, so Rav Sheshet says to him, "The amalach mani, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, Who said this b'raisa? Apparently, it must be only according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore it can't be valid off the halacha. Because according to the Chachamim, again, anything that has tfisas yidei adam, no, according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi Agudi, anything that has tfisas yidei adam is also. So these vegetables or these grains were planted, even they weren't planted for Avodah Zarah, but according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah, they weren't planted to begin with for that purpose. Why are they also b'ana? So the Gemara asks, the Omar, which Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda just says, even Shnatzel of a Seif of Jay Osir, that even if he planted it to begin with and later on he started worshipping it, it would be Osir. So therefore, Rabbi Sheshah says, I can't accept this price, it's not according to Halacha. So the question is, the loikm of the Ilan Shnatzel Mitzchil of the Kach of Rabbanon, why not say that the case is talking about where the grain or the vegetables or the tree or whatever was planted to begin with for that purpose, for Avodah Zarah, and then this price, it could even be according to the Chachamim, because even the Chachamim agreed that if that was done, it would be yes. The answer is Lois Pakadai. No, you can't think like that. The Katani Dumya Dehar. Because after all, the Braitha mentions it in connection with the mountains. If they worship the mountains versus they worship the vegetables. So Mahar shall not be mitzchilu l'kach. Just like a mountain was not originally planted for Avodah Zarah, Hashem didn't create the mountain for Avodah Zarah. Atayinami shall not be mitzchilu l'kach. The same way, you have to argue the Braitha must be talking about vegetables that were not originally planted for Avodah Zarah. They were afterwards used for Avodah Zarah, and the Braitha is saying they're osur. That can only be according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi Agudi. It wouldn't work according to the Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, they themselves would remain mutter. Only the people who worship them would be chayiv
nisa. According to the Chachamim, you have to chop on a tree
So anything that grew further after anything, any continued growth from after they started worshiping, it would be also. Yes. Actually, according to the Chachamim, not. According to the Chachamim, we don't even have that distinction. According to the Chachamim, there's no such distinction. The whole tree itself remains mutter, even the part that grew after they started worshiping it. We said that because it was planted to begin with, not for Avodah Zarah. All it is that you said there's a two-stage process in getting rid of Avodah Zarah from Eretz Yisrael. First, chop it down, and later on, go back and grow it. If it was planted to begin with, yeah.
If
it was planted naturally, then no. The Chachamim said it's not also right. Now, later on, we're going to deal with later in the Perek, you can have a case, for example, where a tree was planted, and they're worshipping it at the Avodah Zarah, and they actually make some kind of change in the tree for the sake of Avodah Zarah. They cut off certain branches or they draw certain designs in it or whatever. That's a different matter. We haven't gotten into that. Here we're just talking about where they're worshiping the tree in its natural state. For that matter, mountains also, later on, we'll stop over here because it's getting late, but we'll deal with also, even in the case of mountains and whatnot, you can have a case where they change. Yeah, let's say, for example, they carve a tunnel in it for Avodah Zarah or whatever. That's a whole different thing. Then there's Tfisas Yidei Adam. That's a whole different matter, yeah. Okay. So we'll stop over here and continue tomorrow. That's the same. Well, we said it might be because they're stupid. It might be because, no, but actually there was a certain sophistication behind Avodah Zarah in those days. We talked about the other day, the Gemara talked about a couple of times. We talked about connection to Dagon, for example, that they believe that there's this ruchnistic power, call it an angel, call it a demon, call it whatever you want, that stands within the tree or this mountain or the statue or what have you, and therefore they're worshiping it. Like it chose, so to speak. Like they would say that this particular deity chose this mountain, let's say, as the place where he's going to be mislavish, so to speak, you know.
And Avi Shachar Hashem gives him strength to mislead people.
Yeah.
What about these trees and mountains? They have any strength in them, or the people are convincing themselves.
People convince themselves, but you know, we're going to learn later on in the next paragraph. We're going to have an interesting discussion over there in a Mishnah and the Gemara following it. That it says over there that the philosophers asked the Chachamim in Rome, if your God hates Avodah Zarah so much, why doesn't he destroy it? And there's a whole back and forth between the Chachamim and the philosophers over that point. One point is Goyim don't worship things that are useless. Goyim also worship things that are necessary for the world, like the sun and the moon and the mountains and whatnot. Right? You can't expect Hashem to destroy them because Ya'avod Elamim Mifnashoytim, as the expression goes, you know, the Mishnah says over there, should Hashem destroy his world because of foolish people? Back and forth over there between the Chachamim and the philosophers. But yeah, you know.
So the whole purpose of the world was to give us satisfaction.
Indeed, but, the purpose of the world is last place one of the which is done by us having the Chiruch Chavshus, right? So that factors into it also, yeah. Yeah, nice.